Facebook.com/VOA1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up, Andrew Smith presents Ask a Teacher. We also have words and their stories from Anna Mateo. And we close the show with an American story. But first,
from the United States and Britain to Russia and South America, cats often appear in famous public places. Cat fans say the animals bring value to the places where they live. Cats can add a cute element or reduce the number of rodents. Sometimes, cats even come to define the place they live in. In 2020, a green-eyed cat named Willow appeared at a Joe Biden campaign event in Pennsylvania. The cat jumped on stage and left with soon-to-be First Lady Jill, who later wrote a book about the creature. But the White House is not the only well-known place in the United States to house cats. The Hemingway Homes and Museum in Key West, Florida, has 59 cats that move freely through the estate. Half of the creatures are related to Hemingway's own six-toed cat, Snow White. Visitors are kept away from the furniture, but the animals sit on the writer's desk. A large cat Bible shows the family history, or lineage, of the resident cats. Alexa Morgan of the Hemingway Museum said the cats bring extra public interest. "We have visitors that come here for Hemingway, and then once they see the cats and they love them, then it's like they visit again, so they can come back and see the cats," she said. In Britain, there is Lilibet. She is a Siberian forest cat who spends time sitting by the fire at the Lanesborough Hotel in London. Plenty of people visit the hotel just to see the cat, who is named after Queen Elizabeth II, said managing director Stuart Geddes. Lilibet has special hair known as hypoallergenic fur. That means her hair is not likely to cause problems for people who are sensitive to cat hair. Lilibet is not the only cat living in an important British building. Hodge sits inside Suffolk Cathedral, which was established in 1106. He moves around, bringing happiness to visitors and going into the shop for treats. Not far away, across the Thames River, is Larry, the famous cat of 10 Downing Street, the official home of the Prime Minister of Britain. Larry has stayed longer than most prime ministers. Keir Starmer is his 6th. Employed as chief mouser to the cabinet office, Larry pays his way by keeping the Prime Minister's office and home more cat than mouse. He has lasted longer than his rival Palmerston, a previous Foreign Office cat who retired to the British countryside in 2020. Cats also live in the Hermitage Museum in St. Petersburg, Russia. About 80 cats get to call Catherine the Great's palace home in return for keeping the pest population down. They have their own press officer and volunteer assistants, who keep them publicized, fed, and watered while they walk around Russia's state museum. In Venezuela, under a banner of Hugo Chavez, an unnamed cat has become well known to the journalists of Caracas. Often found moving near TV crews at the National Electoral Council, this mysterious animal keeps reporters company as they wait for updates. Far away in another part of the world, Lula is so beloved at the day and night bar in Pristina, Kosovo, that her cat face has become its symbol. Owner Cenk Salihu says she is part of the family, and people come just to see and pet Lula. "She is very much the soul of this place," he said. I'm John Russell.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Ahmed in Egypt about the usage of the words arrogance and ego. Dear teacher, I'm just asking about the difference between arrogance and ego because I hear actors use them interchangeably in movies. Thank you for writing to us, Ahmed. I'm happy to answer this question. First, let's explain the word interchangeably. It describes using two things for the same purpose. For example, when we talk about the weather, the words cloudy and overcast mean the same thing. Ego and arrogance are both nouns and are often interchangeable. The American dictionary publisher Merriam-Webster defines ego as having a sense of self-worth and arrogance as having a much greater sense of self-worth over others. Arrogant and egotistical are the adjective forms of these words. An arrogant or egotistical person thinks he or she is better than other people. You have heard actors using both terms because they usually mean the same thing. But we have particular ways of using each of these words. Here are some examples of how to use the two words.
That actor has such a big ego. He agrees to be in movies only if he gets to play the leading role. You can feel her arrogance when she makes all those negative comments about other artists.
We sometimes say that a person has a big ego, but we do not say that a person has a big arrogance. That is because arrogance is a non-count noun. To have an inflated ego is another common way of saying that a person is egotistical. Arrogance is often used with a negative meaning. But ego, defined as a sense of self-worth, is neither positive nor negative. For example,
the teenage years are important for the development of a healthy ego.
When a person feels their ego has been affected negatively, we say that person has a wounded ego. And while we can use the expression a big ego, We rarely say a small ego. Instead, we say a person is not egotistical. Or we simply say a person is humble. For our readers and listeners, do you have a question about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Andrew Smith.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. People around the world share many things in common, but we are also different from each other. Not only do we look, think, and act differently, but we also like different things. Even identical twins may look the same, but are very different individuals. On today's program, we will look at a few expressions to describe how no person is exactly the same as another. The first expression involves trash and treasure. When we say one person's trash is another person's treasure, we mean that something that one person may consider worthless could be highly prized or valued by someone else. Let's hear an example of how to use this expression.
I really don't understand the appeal of Jackson Pollock's paintings. To me, they look like a team of monkeys painted them.
I love Pollock's paintings. I see something new every time I look at them.
Well, I guess it's true what they say. One person's trash is another person's treasure.
Now, rubbish and garbage mean the same as trash. But in this expression, we use trash, because the TR in trash and treasure makes the expression sound more natural. It just sounds better. And sometimes we use the word man in place of person, such as one man's trash is another man's treasure. Again, it is just easier to say. Another expression with a similar meaning is different strokes for different folks. This also means that different things appeal to different people. But as a set expression, we do not say different strokes for different people. That just doesn't sound right. Different strokes for different folks can also mean that people live in different ways and value different things. For example, a perfect evening for my friend is to go out and dance all night long. For me, a perfect evening is to stay at home with a book and a cup of tea. Neither is a better way to spend the evening, so we should not judge. Or in other words, different strokes for different folks. When we want to say that we are all different and like different things without judgment, we can also use the following expressions. It takes all kinds to make the world go round. It takes all kinds. To each his own. Or to each her own. whatever floats your boat. They all mean whatever makes you happy. And all of these expressions have the same general meaning. We are all different and unique. And that's the end of this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
The program, American Stories. Today, we continue Benito Sereno by Herman Melville.
As we told you in earlier parts of our story, rebel slaves seized the ship San Dominic off the coast of Chile. They killed many of its officers and crew. The captain, Benito Sereno, was ordered to sail to Senegal. But first, he was forced to take the ship to the lonely island of Santa Maria, near the southern end of Chile. There, it could safely get water and supplies for the long, dangerous voyage to Africa. At the island, the rebels were surprised and frightened when they found an American ship anchored in the harbor. It also had stopped for water. Many of the rebels wanted to sail away, but their leader, Babo, opposed it. They had little food and water and could not go far. Babo created a story to keep anyone from suspecting that the Spanish vessel was in the hands of rebels and that its captain was a prisoner. At first, Babo seemed successful. The captain of the American ship, Amasa Delano, visited the San Dominic. He suspected nothing, although he was surprised by the general disorder on board. He also could not understand the strange behavior of its captain, Benito Sereno. Later incidents, however, began to worry him. Captain Delano grew more and more suspicious. At one time, he even feared that his life might be in danger. Twice, he caught the Spanish captain and his servant, Babo, with their heads together, whispering like two conspirators. It made Captain Delano wonder, were they plotting to kill him and seize his ship? Who were these men? Cutthroats? Pirates? Captain Delano grew nervous. Then he was happy to see his whaleboat off in the distance. It was returning with supplies for the Spanish ship. The sight of his boat calmed him. It made his suspicions and fear quickly disappear. He felt foolish for having had such dark thoughts. Now, here is Shep O'Neill with the rest of our story, Benito Sereno.
Captain Delano went down to Captain Sereno's cabin to cheer him up and say goodbye. "Better and better, Don Benito," he said as he entered the cabin. "Your troubles will soon be over." The American invited the Spanish captain to come aboard his boat for a cup of coffee. Sereno's eyes brightened, but then the light in them died. He shook his head and said he could not accept the invitation. Captain Delano was offended. He was about to withdraw when Don Benito rose from his chair and took Delano's hand. The Spaniard's hand shook, and he was too excited to speak. Delano pulled his hand away and turned, climbing back to the deck. His face was troubled. Captain Delano could not understand Don Benito's actions. One minute, the Spaniard was warm and polite. Then, just as quickly, cold and hostile. Captain Delano asked himself, "Why did he refuse to join me? Why is he so unfriendly?" Captain Delano got to the deck and was about to step down into his boat when he heard his name. To his surprise, Don Benito was calling, coming quickly toward him. Captain Delano was pleased and turned back to meet him. Don Benito warmly took his hand with more energy and emotion than he had ever shown. But his excitement seemed too much for him, and he could not speak. Babo then came between the two men and put his arm around Don Benito to support him. Clearly, he wanted to end the meeting between the two captains. Walking between the two men, Babo went with them to the walkway. Don Benito would not let go of Captain Delano's hand. He held it tightly across his servant's body. Soon, they were standing by the ship's side, looking down into the American boat. Its crew turned up their wondering eyes. Captain Delano did not know what to do as he waited for Don Benito to let go of his hand. He wanted to step down into his boat, but Don Benito still firmly held his hand. Then, in an excited voice, the Spaniard said, "I can go no further. Here I must say goodbye. Farewell, my dear, dear Don Amasa. Go, go," and he tore his hand loose. "Go, and God protect you better than he did me. Go, Don Amasa, my best friend." Captain Delano was deeply moved. He would have stayed for another minute or so, but he caught the eye of Babo. It seemed to say, "This is bad for Don Benito's health." And so he quickly took the short step down into his boat with the continuing farewells of Don Benito, who stood rooted at the ship's side. Captain Delano sat down in the back of his boat, gave Don Benito a last salute, and ordered his men to push off. The boat began to move. Suddenly, Don Benito sprang over the side and came down at Delano's feet, and he kept shouting toward the Spanish ship. His cries were so wild that no one could understand him. An American officer asked, "What does this mean?" Captain Delano turned a cold smile upon Captain Sereno and said he neither knew nor cared. "It seems," he added, "that the Spaniard has taken it into his head to give his people the idea that we want to kidnap him. Or else," and suddenly Captain Delano shouted, "Watch out for your lives." He saw Babo, the servant, on the rail above with a dagger in his hand. He was ready to jump. What followed happened so quickly that Captain Delano could not tell one incident from another. They all came together in one great blur of violent action and excitement. As Babo came down, Captain Delano flung Don Benito aside and caught the rebel leader, pulling the dagger from his hand. He pushed Babo firmly down in the bottom of the boat, which now began to pick up speed. Then Babo, with his one free hand, pulled a second dagger from his clothes and struck at Captain Sereno. Captain Delano knocked it from his hand. Now he saw everything clearly. Babo had leaped into the whaleboat, not to kill him, but to kill Captain Sereno. For the first time, he understood the mysterious behavior of Don Benito, a prisoner under sentence of death. He looked back at the Spanish ship and got a clear picture of what its captain had escaped. On board the San Dominique, the shouting rebels were raising their axes and knives in a wild revolt. They stopped some of the Spanish sailors from jumping into the sea. A few, however, jumped, while two or three who were not quick enough went hurrying up the topmost wood arms. Captain Delano signaled to his ship, ordering it to get its guns ready. When the whale boat reached his ship, Captain Delano asked for ropes. He tied Babo and had him pulled up on deck. A small boat was quickly sent out to pick up three Spanish sailors who had jumped from Captain Sereno's ship. Captain Delano asked Don Benito what guns the rebels had. He answered that they had none that could be used. In the first days of the rebellion, a cabin passenger, now dead, had destroyed the few guns there were. The Americans fired six shots at the San Dominique, but the rebel ship moved out of reach. Small boats were armed and lowered. Captain Delano ordered his men into them, and they moved out to capture the rebel ship. The boats caught up with the San Dominique when it was nearly night. But the moon was rising, and the gunners were able to see where they were shooting. The rebels had no bullets, and they could do nothing but yell. Many of the rebels were killed, and the San Dominique was captured. After an investigation, Babo was found guilty of stealing a ship and of murder and was hanged. Captain Benito Sereno never was well again, and he soon died. So ended the terrible story of the slave revolt aboard the slave ship, the San Dominique.
That's all the time we have for today's show, but join us again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program. Thanks for listening. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Brian Lynn.